All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be going deep on a case that on the surface might seem, pretty niche, like something you might only run into if you're specializing in, say, maritime law. But trust me, there's a really interesting concept at the heart of this case that pops up all over in commercial law, and it's something that, frankly, anyone entering into contracts should really wrap their heads around.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there. We're talking about, those fundamental commercial law principles, the ones we usually think about when we're talking about buying and selling goods, right? But as we'll see today, they can actually have some pretty big implications in areas that you might not expect, like maritime contracts, for instance.
Exactly. So today's deep dive is going to be based on Clem Perrin Marine Towing, Inc. v. Panama Canal Company. And our main mission here is to figure out, like, when is a party allowed to say, whoa, hold on a second, I'm not fulfilling my end of the bargain until I get some assurance that you're going to be able to hold up your end of the deal.
Right. And specifically, we're going to be looking at when a party can legitimately hold back payment because they have some pretty serious concerns about the other party's ability to, actually follow through with their promises. Even if, and this is key, even if there hasn't been a clear breach of contract yet.
Okay, so we're talking about those situations where there are like warning signs, right? But maybe not a full-blown breach just yet.
Precisely. Think of it like this. You're about to buy a house, right? Everything seems fine, but then you find out the seller might be facing foreclosure. You'd probably want some reassurance that they can actually transfer ownership to you before you hand over that big check, right?
Totally.
Okay, so let's set the stage for this case. We're going back in time to 1974, and the Panama Canal Company, PCC for short, enters into this agreement with Clem Perrin Marine Towing, Inc., or CPMT, the deal. PCC wants to lease a tugboat from CPMT under what's called a bareboat charter party.
Right. And this bareboat charter party is important. It's not just a simple rental agreement. It basically gives PCC complete control over the tugboat for a fixed period, in this case, 3 years. They're responsible for everything, the crew, the maintenance, the whole nine yards. So right off the bat, you can see how the allocation of risk and responsibility in this kind of agreement is going to be really crucial when we get into, who's responsible for keeping the tugboat financially afloat.
Makes sense. So the total cost of this lease was a cool $344,880. But here's the kicker. The agreement also included this option for PCC to buy the tug outright at the end of the lease.
And not just buy it, but buy it at a price that was significantly below market value. So for PCC, this was potentially a really sweet deal. Lease the tug for 3 years, then snag it for a bargain price.
Okay, so now fast forward to 1976. The final lease payment, which is a hefty $49,480, is due on September 15th. And that purchase option that's looming on the horizon becoming exercisable around December 15th.
Right. So PCC is probably thinking, okay, we're getting close to owning this tug outright. But that's when things start to go a little sideways.
Yeah, August 1976 rolls around, and PCC uncovers something pretty concerning. They discover that CPMT has stopped making payments on the tugboat's first mortgage. That's a big red flag, right? Like, financially speaking, that doesn't look so good.
Absolutely. But here's where it gets even more interesting. And this is where it really starts to get to the heart of our deep dive today. It turns out that CPMT was not only behind on their first mortgage payments, but they had also, and get this, they had secretly taken out a third mortgage on the tugboat.
Wait, a third mortgage on top of the first mortgage they weren't even paying for.
Yep. Talk about a hidden financial burden. And this wasn't just, a small loan either. This was a significant encumbrance on the tug's title. And remember, PCC was expecting to get clear title if they exercised their purchase option. So this undisclosed third mortgage threw a major wrench in the works.
Okay, so you can imagine PCC is not happy about this. I mean, not only is the company they're leasing from potentially in financial trouble, but they also discover this secret mortgage that could jeopardize their ability to buy the tugboat outright. So what do they do? Well, on August 27th, 1976, PCC sends a letter to CPMT.
And in that letter, they basically say, look, we're not going to make that final lease payment until you give us some solid assurance that you can actually deliver clear title to this tugboat by December 15th when our purchase option kicks in.
Which is completely reasonable, right? I mean, if I was PCC, I'd be having second thoughts too. So what does CPMT do?
Well, instead of trying to, reassure PCC or explain the situation, they do something pretty surprising. They actually file a lawsuit against PCC, like right away. 2 days later, lawsuit.
Wow. So they go straight to court. And that brings us to the core legal issue in this case, right? Was PCC justified in withholding that final payment and demanding assurance from CPMT?
Exactly. And to answer that, we need to dive into the legal principles at play here. Specifically, this concept of reasonable insecurity and how it plays out in commercial contracts. Now, this all started as a maritime contract, right? Governed by admiralty law, which, just to clarify, is basically the body of law that deals with maritime activities and contracts. So it makes sense that the case started there. But when this case went up on appeal, the courts actually ended up looking to a broader set of principles for guidance. Principles from the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC specifically, Section 2609.
Okay, the UCC. Now, most law students probably associate that with, the sale of goods. So how does that apply to this case, which is about a maritime lease?
That's a great question, and it really highlights how interconnected and areas of commercial law can be. You see, even though the contract itself fell under admiralty law, the Court of Appeals looked to the UCC, particularly Article 2, which deals with the sale of goods, as what they call persuasive authority.
Persuasive authority, meaning like it wasn't binding on them, but they considered it influential.
Exactly. Because even though it wasn't directly applicable, the court recognized that the UCC, especially Section 2609, embodies these widely accepted principles of fair dealing and commercial reasonableness. You know, the kind of principles that are essential for ensuring trust and predictability in any business transaction.
So even though we're talking about a lease, the court was essentially saying that those core principles of fairness and reasonableness from the UCC should still guide their decision.
Precisely. And that's a really important point. It shows how courts can apply these sort of universally applicable principles of commercial law, even when the case itself might fall under a different specific area of law.
Okay, so let's break down Section 2609, the part about reasonable grounds for insecurity. What exactly does it say, and how did the court use it in this case?
So Section 2609 essentially says that if one party to a contract has, justifiable reasons to believe that the other party might not be able to fulfill their end of the deal, then they can demand adequate assurance of due performance from that party.
Adequate assurance of due performance. So basically saying, hey, prove to me that you're still good for this.
Right. And if they don't receive that assurance, they're actually allowed to suspend their own performance under the contract. So in PCC's case, the court found that they had not just one, but three very solid reasons to feel insecure about CPMT's ability to deliver on their promise of clear title.
Okay, let's go through those reasons.
Absolutely. So, reason number one, CPMT was in default on their mortgage payments for the tugboat. That right there is a pretty strong indicator of financial instability, right? And it definitely raises concerns about their ability to clear all encumbrances on the title.
Makes sense. What about reason number two?
Well, reason number two is that secret third mortgage that PCC uncovered. Remember that. Not only does that further complicate the tugboat's title, but the fact that CPMT kept it hidden also suggests a lack of transparency and honesty, which further erodes trust in their ability to fulfill their contractual obligations.
So basically, they were being shady. And what's the third reason?
The third reason is kind of the culmination of the first two. All of this financial instability directly threatened PCC's ability to exercise their purchase option and acquire clear title to the tugboat, which, remember, was a key part of the entire agreement. So when you put all of this together, it's clear that PCC had very real and very justifiable reasons to be concerned.
So it wasn't just a hunch. It was based on concrete evidence that something was fishy.
Exactly. And the court recognized that. They said that PCC's demand for assurance was completely reasonable and commercially sound. They weren't asking for anything out of line. They simply wanted confirmation that, despite these red flags, CPMT could still hold up their end of the bargain and deliver clear title when the time came.
And remember how CPMT reacted to that demand? They basically just ignored it and went straight to court.
Right. And that silence, that failure to provide any kind of reassurance, really didn't help their case. In fact, the court actually highlighted CPMT's silence as a key factor in their decision. They even made this pretty pointed statement, and I'm quoting here, "If CPMT was in fine financial shape, all they had to do was explain. Their silence spoke volumes."
Wow, their silence spoke volumes. That's a pretty powerful statement from the court. So they're basically saying that if CPMT was truly capable of delivering clear title, they would have simply said so, right?
Precisely. Instead, their silence was interpreted as evidence that they likely couldn't provide that assurance. But the story doesn't end there. Remember, PCC didn't just sit back and wait for the court to decide. They actually took some pretty proactive steps to protect their interests while this legal battle was playing out.
Okay, yeah, they didn't just complain. They took action. What did they do?
Well, while the lawsuit was ongoing, PCC actually went out and purchased the first and second mortgages on the tugboat.
Wait, they bought out the mortgages? That's a pretty bold move.
It was. And it wasn't cheap either. It cost them over $111,000. But they did it to basically safeguard their potential ownership of the tug. They were essentially saying, okay, if CPMT can't clear the title, we'll take matters into our own hands.
Which is pretty smart when you think about it. They were taking control of the situation instead of just passively waiting to see what would happen. But, you know, we mentioned earlier that the district court initially sided with CPMT. So, did they take this into account when they made their ruling?
That's interesting, isn't it? It seems like the district court didn't really factor in this proactive step that PCC took.
Yeah.
But when the case went up on appeal to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, things changed. Big time.
Okay, so what happened at the Fifth Circuit? Did they agree with the district court?
Not at all. The Fifth Circuit actually completely overturned the district court's ruling. They sided with PCC, finding that they were fully justified in withholding payment and demanding assurance. And to really drive their point home, they issued three key orders.
Three key orders. Let's hear them.
Okay, order number one. CPMT was ordered to deliver clear title to the tugboat to PCC. Remember that purchase option? Well, the court basically said, you have to honor that option, and you have to deliver the tugboat free and clear of any encumbrances.
So, specific performance? They had to do what they originally promised. What about the second order?
The second order focused on the money PCC had spent buying those mortgages. The court said that the more than $111,000 that PCC had shelled out would be deducted from any remaining amounts they might have owed CPMT. So basically, PCC got credit for stepping up and protecting their interests.
Got it. Okay, what about the third order? This is where it gets really interesting,
You
right?
bet. The third order was a big one. The Fifth Circuit actually instructed the district court to consider what's called piercing the corporate veil of CPMT. Now, this is a pretty significant legal move.
Piercing the corporate veil. That sounds serious. What does that mean exactly?
So normally a corporation is treated as a separate legal entity from its shareholders, right? It's like its own person, legally speaking. But under certain circumstances, a court can decide to pierce that veil of corporate separation and hold the individual shareholders personally liable for the company's debts or wrongdoings.
So in this case, they were considering holding CPMT's owners personally responsible. That suggests the court really wasn't happy with how CPMT had acted, right?
Exactly. It indicates that they believed CPMT's actions were, potentially more than just a simple breach of contract. There might have been some deeper issues with how the company was being run.
So in the end, PCC got a complete victory. And CPMT, well, they ended up in a much worse position than if they had just been upfront and honest from the beginning.
That's a great point. It really highlights how important transparency and good faith are in commercial dealings. Because when you try to hide things or be evasive, it can really backfire. Especially when you're dealing with something as important as clear title and financial stability.
Okay, so let's step back for a minute and talk about the big picture. What are the main takeaways from this case? What should law students, or really anyone who deals with contracts, learn from this whole saga?
There's a lot to unpack here, but I think one of the most important lessons is this. You don't always need absolute certainty that the other party is going to breach the contract to start taking protective measures. If you have reasonable grounds to feel insecure, based on credible information, you have the right to demand assurance. And remember, the demand for assurance should be in writing. It puts the other party on notice and creates a legal record of your concerns.
So if you see those red flags, don't just ignore them. Speak up, ask for reassurance, and put everything in writing.
Exactly. And the second takeaway is that silence can be deafening. If the other party can't or won't provide adequate assurance when you have legitimate concerns, well, that silence can actually be used against them in court.
It's almost like an admission of guilt, in a way.
In a sense, yes. And the third takeaway, and I think this is particularly relevant for law students, is that the UCC has a far-reaching influence. We saw how its principles, even though we were dealing with a maritime contract, were adopted as persuasive authority by the court.
So, even though it's not always directly applicable, the UCC can still provide valuable guidance in a wide range of commercial disputes.
Precisely. Its principles of fairness, reasonableness, and good faith are woven into the fabric of commercial law.
So, to sum it all up, PCC was in the right. They acted prudently and legally. And this case really shows how courts are willing to apply practical, commercially sensible principles when one party's ability to fulfill their end of the bargain comes into question.
Right. And it highlights the importance of understanding those broader commercial realities and the legal tools you have at your disposal to address potential issues. You know, it's not just about knowing the letter of the contract. It's about being able to navigate those more nuanced situations where things aren't so black and white.
So as you move forward in your legal careers, or even if you're just entering into contracts in your everyday life, remember this case. It's a reminder to be proactive, to communicate clearly, and to know your rights.
And one final thought to leave you with. Imagine if PCC hadn't taken that step of buying out those mortgages. Would the court have ruled the same way? Food for thought.
It definitely makes you wonder. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.